guest this week is Amy Dotson. She's the director of the Northwest Film Center and curator of film and new media at the Portland Art Museum. Amy's here to talk about Venice VR Expanded, which runs at the museum through September the 19th, 2021. Thanks very much for doing Art Focus again by Zoom, Amy.
Oh, thrilled to be here. Thanks for having me.
So the Film Center did Venice VR last year. This is the virtual reality portion of the Venice Biennial. So people have made these VR films and videos and, you know, kind of virtual installations to enter into the contests. How many are you showing this year? And is it contemporary with a competition in Italy?
Sure. So it is part actually of the Venice Film Festival, which obviously is part of the Biennale di Venezia, which has biennials for art, architecture, music, of course, film, which is the Venice Film Festival and college cinema program, as well as their VR program, which they've had now at Venice, I believe, for the last 4 years. So they really are on the cutting edge of what's happening next. And they are doing it live as we speak at the Venice Film Festival on an island near Veleto. So it's incorporated into all the things that are happening for the film festival. And we're the only place in the United States that they have chosen as a partner. So we're in good company with Moscow and Milan and France and all these places internationally, but we are the only place in the United States again this year that are seeing these works. And we have over 30 pieces. Many of them are the competition pieces, as well as a best of section, which really shows both from an artistic and a technology perspective, kind of what's possible and what's coming next with the VR. And I'm really thrilled because I also work, in full disclosure, for the Venice Biennale in both their film and VR programs. And so I am thrilled because there's also a piece from what they call their VR college cinema, which, it's a bit like indie film versus Hollywood. It's a lot of new faces and new folks that are trying the technology for the first time. And there's a piece in the program as well from that. So it's a really mixed lineup. And, of those 30 films, it's quite impressive. There's a little something for everyone: animation, nonfiction storytelling. There's a lot of great kind of sci-fi and nature-based work this year. A lot of things that are really grappling with the big picture of what does it mean to take up space? What does it mean to be alive? What does it mean to don a headset and go somewhere in your mind, in your imagination? So I really encourage folks that maybe are thinking, it might not be for me, or, my 11-year-old does that and plays games on it. This is a very different thing. And that's why they're really keen to partner with the Portland Art Museum, because that's really a part of where Portland is going next, where the Art Museum is going next, and certainly where the Film Center is going next.
So people pay $35 for an hour. It's 30 if you're a member, and you go in and you have to pre-book, so you pick your time online. You go in, they give you a clean headset, you kind of get a choice between the HTC Vive or the Oculus. I think that's the choice. I guess it doesn't matter that much. And then you stand in your little corner of the ballroom, the Mark Ballroom, and put this on, and so you don't really feel like you're anywhere. You are immersed, and you have an hour. There's a bunch of menus you got to get through. The first one I watched was called Tearless. It's like fearless, but with a T, Tearless. Mm-hmm. And it was about a clinic for prostitutes in Korea who had STDs. You're walking through this abandoned building where the ceiling's fallen in, the tiles are off the floor, the showers are all broken. And so this was made in South Korea. Give us a bit of background for Tearless.
Sure. So, first off, I'm so glad that you were able to come. And we all worked really hard with a group called the Mobile Projection Unit, which is Fernanda D'Agostino and Sarah Turner. They're local here to Portland, to make sure that when you walk in, you're not just walking into a ballroom, you're walking into a fully immersive space. And they have beautifully projection mapped the space with over 15 artists from around the world that they collaborated with during this time to custom build the space so it feels immersive and exciting when folks come in. And you're right, you do don that headset and the strangest thing happens. It's not like sitting at home and watching TV or scrolling through your phone, which I think many of us have been doing during this time. You're actually in the story. So I think that it's really exciting. You're starting with talking about tier lists, because right now VR is in such early days, and people often, when new mediums or new methods are coming out, they tend to compare. Oh, it's a little bit like a comic book. It's a little bit like a game. You know, it has filmic elements, but all of those things manipulate time. Right? When you're watching a movie for 2 hours, you're transported into that place, or you're watching Bridgerton, you're transported there. But you're not. You're still on your couch. The difference is really playing within the space is what VR does so very well. And with tier lists, I feel like that's the best example I've seen of this work, where it doesn't tell a story in the traditional sense, where you're watching straight ahead. You're actually dropped into this place called Monkey House, which you describe. You really feel like you're there. VR has an uncanny ability to play with your empathy sensors. And because it messes with space, you actually, there are certain things that happen emotionally that make you feel like you're actually there and can experience by proxy what some of these folks not only saw or heard, but felt. And I think that, you know, this is a female director who has come to us from the film world, Gina Kim. She's had a number of features and shorts. And I just love what she's done with this project, because it feels like it could only be in VR. And I think that's something that is so important when we're looking at this work of, you know, how does it feel different than if I had watched this in a three video installation in a museum, or I'd sat on my couch and experienced this. And I think, you know, that is why the technology of VR excites me so much, is that it's a totally different ballgame when you start to mess with space.
The shots sort of change at will. So you're watching, you're in a room, and then maybe the kind of examination gurney with the stirrups appears sort of from nowhere. And then suddenly you're in another room and you're looking down a hallway, and it's like, you know, the walls are broken. Next, you could be on the edge of the roof standing, sort of looking over the countryside. You have no control at all. The only person is a sort of woman smoking on a stairwell, sort of looking at you, but not really reacting to you. And then she gets up and walks away. What is this playing more with space than with time, would you say?
Very much so. And I love what you just said, Joseph, of being, you know, you're as an observer, you're not in control, which is very much, I think, the way that the director wants you to feel. These women were not in control. That this was not something that they did willingly. And so I think, again, to be in those spaces and places and to be looked at by the smoking woman, I feel like it's something where you couldn't have told the story any other way. It's almost as if we're watching ghosts and also very much in the present. So it's interesting in that your question is apt. It does play with time, but because you're in this space, it really does things that don't allow you to be passive as an observer. You're really active in the space, and hopefully it makes folks think a little bit about the women that were there and you know, the nine decade issue of Korean comfort women for the US military.
And I actually abandoned it because I didn't look to see how long it was, and I was getting anxious, you know, after all the setup and that. I felt like I was eating into my hour or my 50 minutes, so I kind of abandoned it. But I was sort of giving up on a narrative at that point anyway.
I never give up. It's only 12 minutes of my life. And you know, I think that it's one of those things where, you know, these artists have worked so hard to come up with the work. And I don't give up, but I do mm-hmm. respect you. We're moving forward. This is an experimental piece. This is not something that is linear. This is not something for kids. This is definitely something that is a work of art. And I think it stayed with me in a very visceral way. And I find that that's very true with VR, that sometimes when I'm in the moment, I'm not quite sure what I'm supposed to be doing or feeling, or it's very jarring. There's other works that we'll talk about that, like, you're in it, you're thrown into the deep end of the pool. But this one has really stuck with me in a very visceral way, and allowed me, once I took off my headsets, to talk to others who've seen it and have conversations in a way that maybe some of the other pieces are more experiential. You're along for the ride. So I think that Gina's piece is quite lovely, and I'm really glad that it's here at Portland, because I think it brings up a lot of questions about the past that are very, very present in our moment in time today as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it reminded me of being in Cambodia and in the the main museum about the Khmer Rouge, where you're in a sort of abandoned building a lot of the time, and it's really hot and stuff hasn't been kept up. You know, everything's like iron bedsteads and peeling plaster. It's very intense like that.
You're there. You're bearing witness and seeing it all.
Mm-hmm. Another piece that I looked at, mainly because of the name, is called Sick Rose. I thought it might be something to do with the William Blake poem, "O Rose, Thou Art Sick." But it was by, or its other name is Bing Mei Gui.
Mm-hmm.
And it looked a lot like a Leica stop animation. You got a little girl in bed, she's sick, her mom's a nurse, can't stay with her, has to go to work to look after other sick people, and it's very coronavirus-y. There's talk of a contagious virus, and the little girl gets out of bed and goes to find her mother at the hospital. You know, where does stop animation of this kind fit into VR?
I think animation, this is some of the future of animation. It's so beautiful. I love this story. It really is, like you said, it's a time of raging pandemics, and this little girl is traveling through a city that's filled with viruses and people that, seemingly don't care. And so I think that sometimes the tough stories come through with animation in ways that are unexpected. I will say that my kids watched it, I watched it, they were really affected by it. And I think that you're seeing it through her eyes, and you're seeing what it's like not to be, to be little, to be small, to take up very little space in this very crowded, dirty, busy area. And at the end of the day, she's seeking comfort. And so I think that it's incredibly relevant to right now. I think the stop motion animation is beautiful. This is a piece that comes out of China, and I think especially in a town like Portland, which stop motion animation, whether it's Leica, whether it's Shadow Machine, whether it's obviously the early work of Will Vinton and many other independent artists that are here that are playing within this medium, I would just urge you to come and check this out, because it is independent animation told in a way that really, again, taps into point of view. And when these, it's one thing when you're either on your computer or in a studio putting things into places and spaces. It's another when your audience can be in that space with the character, creature, or kind of imagined in the imagined world. So to me, this is a really wonderful example, not just of animation, but of world building. And I think that's something that's unique to VR, in that you are not building it flat and then moving the camera. You have a 360 degree halo of cameras, and you are moving that through the space. So I think, it's a different kind of VR, but a really spectacular example of what can happen and how you can immerse yourself in a world in this kind of environment.
Mm-hmm. You could look around. It had that feeling. There was so much detail to look at. I was on the Oculus. It was the first day I went, so it wouldn't set up properly, and then it crashed at some point. So I had to abandon that one as well.
Joseph, I think we've worked out the kinks at this point. It's interesting. Venice is such a prestigious place to work and to be a partner with, sending it to 15 partners with 15 different specifications all over the world. So my hat goes off to them.
My name is Joseph Gallivan. You're listening to Art Focus on KBOO Portland. My guest this week is Amy Dotson. She is the director of the Northwest Film Center and the curator of film and new media at the Portland Art Museum. She's talking about Venice VR Expanded, which runs through September the 19th, 2021 at the Portland Art Museum. The piece that I like most of all these was called Glimpse. I guess it was made in Britain. It's got like this self-effacing, slightly klutzy illustrator who's a panda courting a very skinny little doe-eyed doe. I think she is a doe. Is she a deer? And she's a musician. And it tells the story of their relationship in a very scattered way. You see them together, you see them breaking up, you see him after, you know, how miserable he is. It's really beautiful. There's a lot of detail. The acting is good, you know, the script is interesting. And one thing I loved is you're in this illustrator's studio and there's a mirror, and when you move your head, your reflection is the panda bear guy, you know. So when you move your head, that's what you see, is the panda moving. The scenes between the two of them move around in space, like they'll appear from the left, and also at one point your vision is from a shelf and you're next to like giant pencils and paintbrushes, so it's like you're a tiny you know, kind of fly on the wall viewer. So I really enjoyed this. Do you know much background about Glimpse?
Sure. So it's actually by an Irish director, Benjamin Cleary. He had a short film that won him an Academy Award a few years back.
Called
Stutterer. And, you know, this is the big Hollywood one, right? It has Taron Egerton as the lead actor. And, you know, it's interesting because much like going to the movies, there are all sorts of choices. And you know, this is a more high-end, project with name talent and kind of name work behind it. So I think it's fantastic. And obviously, people love animals, and so it's, you know, got that, and it's got the kind of, like, mm-hmm. you said, the sensibility and the sense of humor that really draws people in. And I do think with perspective it is just fantastic. It really allows you to be very creative in the space and very it's an emotive piece, right? And you said it best, where it's really about being a visual feast. I think in addition to Taron Egerton, you have Rice, the character, is also voiced by Lucy Boynton. So there's she's in the Netflix series, The Politician. So you have, you know, a global superstar, and then you have somebody that's a rising star that are actually doing it. What's really, I love the technology called Unreal Engine. And really it's kind of a world-class way to do animation and VFX. And I think, you know, for many, many years, it's been part of the gaming world. I know that for, you know, my colleagues at Tribeca, they now have a fellowship for filmmakers to work with folks at Unreal Engine to, you know, make pieces like this. So I think that this is whether it's film or animation or advertisements, but certainly VR, this cutting edge technology of Unreal Engine is going to be seen more and more.
Do you think using, you know, that gaming engine is more efficient and quicker than stop animation?
Unreal Engine also takes a lot of technical skills and craft, and lots of people who know everything they need to know about lighting and motion and, you know, how to move through space and how to get people emotionally invested. You know, technology is such an amazing thing, but if you can't get people emotionally invested and driven to continue to watch, that's the real battle when you take away the tech.
What do you think about the way the characters kind of float through space? Because you're in a studio, an illustrator studio, with all the little shelves and drawers and paintbrushes, but sometimes there seem to be no ceiling and there's no floor and things move around.
It is very dreamlike. And I think that there's something about being in the studio that is dreamlike, right? And you kind of voyage through their mind, you know, the mind and the heart and the illustrations and the space. And again, you feel like you're a part of things in a way that is active. And I love that, because maybe folks haven't been in an illustrator's studio, or maybe they haven't had that feeling of being in an illustrator's studio. And I think that is really powerful stuff that people are exploring in this space that I can't wait to see more of, whether it's handmade, or whether it's documentary, experimental documentary style, or whether it's something that's, you know, through this Unreal Engine technology, you know, with name actors and talent. So, you know, all of these people are immensely talented. And I have to say, it is a very different tool in the toolbox to make a VR piece than it is to make a traditional film in any sense.
There was a little interactivity, like a book, a sketchbook comes out, and then your hands are these big bare hands, and you can like flip pages. It's kind of basic, kind of like a CD-ROM, you know, 25 years ago. Do you think interactivity has to be minimized at some point?
No, I think it's going to be maximized. Everything that I'm reading, all of my colleagues, whether it's a backpack or whether it's haptic or, you know, touch technology, whether it's suits, whether it's tapping your glasses and going into immersive worlds, I think it's only going to get more immersive. So I think I'm really excited. Like I said, this is early, early days. And I remember the headsets were even clunkier on your head. And, you know, they still, you can still feel the clunk, but I think they're going to start to look like glasses that I know I wear. I don't know that you wear. So I think they're going to start to look and feel a lot more like that and be integrated even more into a more familiar way to wear headsets or to have other technologies that immerse us into these worlds. There are a lot of smart artists and storytellers and technologists that are finding ways to, you know, to work on this. And I think a lot of it is around the fact that we, you know, we need to connect as humans. And right now in VR, you can do it together. You know, there's VR chat. At the end of the day, what VR and all great storytelling is doing is comforting us, is helping us see things a little differently, and giving us new perspective, and, you know, maybe even entertaining us or wowing us in some way. And I think that, to me, you know, because it's such a new technology, sometimes the technology wows people as much as the storytelling. But it's a really, you know, I think we're in early days, and there's a lot of work to be done to make it more immersive and also to make it more inclusive.
I watched one called The Last Worker, which felt like a video game. I was a guy in a crane with a big claw hand and another hand that had a spinning saw, and I was sort of fighting these flying drones that were attacking me. There are so many different ways that people produce content for these headsets. There isn't really a genre yet.
You know, there isn't. And I think that's exciting. It's kind of a medium that's not content to be contained. I get into very exciting conversations with the curators of Venice VR, which is Liz Rosenthal and Michel Réac. So those are our partners in Venice. And, you know, it's interesting because we keep comparing them. Oh, it's a little gamified, or, oh, it feels cinematic. And there's not a language or words to really describe the experience yet. And yet it's so accessible. It's as accessible as putting on a headset. I think our youngest person that we've had is 9 and our oldest is 84 so far. And, you know, The Last Worker, it's interesting. It is a narrative adventure that is centered around a kind of automated and dehumanizing world. And the story puts the player into the body of Kurt, who is the last worker in a fulfillment center in Manhattan. Kurt comes to the realization that he does not want to do this anymore. And so he has to make decisions about, you know, who he wants to be and where he wants to work and how he's going to go forward. And I think, again, even in that gamified space, it's really talking about some of the like big issues of our time, right? Like, and of just being alive. Like, what is the way that we want to move through our lives? So I think that it was interesting to me because somebody that was older was really mentioning the themes, whereas some of the younger folks that did it, and we have had a lot of younger folks come in, were really interested in them and having choices and being able to be in a story where they had some control over the narrative. And I thought that was really, really touching, that you had two different groups of folks that took away very different things, and yet they both really enjoyed it.
So are there any limits to age of who can show up and do Venice VR Expanded?
Sure. So we recommend 14 plus, but there are plenty of pieces that are, you know, depending on their parent or guardian, would be appropriate for children. And, you know, with the home Oculus setup, many children may have experienced that or at an arcade. But I think it's really something that is the future. And so we encourage, if parents or guardians feel comfortable bringing kids that I would say probably 8 and up, that there's plenty of great work that that they could experience that might just help them to think about stories a little differently for the future, and how art can be made and can be experienced, and that really we just want to make this accessible for folks. You know, we all can't travel to Venice, to a small island, to see this, and so I feel really blessed that, you know, we can bring this to Portland and to audiences that, you know, might not be able to see this otherwise.
So it's $35 and you get an hour, or it's supposedly 50 minutes. I would recommend people study the list of what's available before they go. You don't want to be messing around with menus for the first 15 minutes and adjusting your headset.
Yep, there's great instructions that you can download from the website, as well as the full PDF of all of the different projects. So we have all of that on site as well. And we have 12 folks that are VR specialists that are there to help talk to you and work with you and walk you through if there are issues. But we've streamlined it quite a bit, and hopefully you just put on your headset and go. And we are really excited. As you mentioned, there are Oculus headsets, there are Vive headsets, but we're thrilled to have HP is our official sponsor of the program, and their headsets are amazing as well. I feel like I'm driving a Ferrari when I put them on, because the pixelation and the way that it works are different. So I encourage people to take a look at, you know, what the different headsets are, because those are going to be something for the future that will definitely inform your experience. If you don't know anything about VR, I also just encourage you to come and try it and see what it's like, because we had another journalist that was there that had never put on a headset, and she screamed. She just went, "Ah, it's all around me." And so I think that there's just a pure joy to this and this technology and this art that is really spectacular. And I don't know about you, Joseph, I feel like the world needs a little more pure joy right now in its art and in the world. So
can you foresee a day where you can just go online and see the Venice offerings without going anywhere or paying anything, like you're on YouTube but you're wearing a headset?
It's a great question that, you know, I'm sure my colleagues in Venice are thinking about. I know that this year they also are offering VR chat, which is, you know, it is a little bit more of an open source space for people not only to come and see work, but also to build work. So I think that that is a step in the right direction and really just innovative and exciting. And they have a couple of pieces on there as well. We're not showing those, but they are showing those in Venice. And I think that that's something that, you know, in the future will make it a little more accessible for people who maybe have a laptop or a phone to participate.
My name's Joseph Gallivan. You've been listening to Art Focus on KBOO Portland. My guest this week was Amy Dotson. She's the director of the Northwest Film Center and curator of film and new media at the Portland Art Museum. And she was talking about Venice VR Expanded, which is a virtual reality show. And it's on now through September the 19th, 2021 at the Portland Art Museum. Thanks very much for doing Art Focus by Zoom again, Amy.
Thank you. Appreciate it, Joseph.
está sintonizando KDOO Portland.
Bienvenidos a un breve informativo en su estación comunitaria KBOO 90.7 FM. Hoy martes 7 de septiembre del 2021. La Organización Mundial de la Salud advierte que más de 2.000 centros de salud en Afganistán podrían verse obligados a cerrar pronto, al menos temporalmente, porque sus donantes no pueden trabajar con los talibanes. Por otro lado, en todo Estados Unidos, al menos 1.000 escuelas en 35 estados han cancelado las clases presenciales desde el comienzo del año escolar y decenas de miles de estudiantes se vieron obligados a ponerse en cuarentena debido a la propagación comunitaria del coronavirus. Se ha producido un número desproporcionado